Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
Down 21-0 in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh, yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that Porzingis! Clank.
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big golf show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California as we close up the golf major season and work our way towards the end of August. August isn't quite over yet, but we do have one big announcement for you. We are pleased to announce the return of the college football preview. That is next week here on DittCow. So DittCow.com, you can check that out with your friends, John in Connecticut and Ron in New Jersey, along with me, breaking down all the big Power 5 conferences and the other mid-major conferences in FBS. So we have the most complete coverage here in the city, and we hope that you can join us once again for all that's new to come in the season of college football. It's really close. So we look forward to bringing that to you 1 week from now. We're here on Tuesday instead of our usual Wednesday so that we can cover the PGA Championship. Joining us tonight for PGA Championship coverage, we have our friends Mike in North Jersey and the aforementioned John in Connecticut with us. So what we cover tonight... A lot of news, especially in the world of golf, beyond this tournament. But in the tournament itself, you looked at a very exciting Sunday finish in which, you know, a lot of twists and turns. I mean, there was, you had Kevin Kisner leading for a lot of it. You had Hideki Matsuyama making an unbelievable, having an unbelievable round on Friday in the second round, catching up to Kisner. And then Matsuyama gives way to Kisner again. And then you had other people in the mix. You had Patrick Reed and Francisco Molinari, Ricky Fowler, even Jason Day had a few moments until he started to fade away. And then it all came up to the eventual winner, who was not on the leaderboard really in the first three rounds. And he would be Justin Thomas, a first ever winner of a major. This is his first major at the age of 24. Sounds like familiar territory when you think about how Jordan Spieth was barely 20 when he won his first major at the Masters. So definitely a big moment. And now let's chat a little bit about the big moment. We'll go ahead and bring in our friends. We start with Mike in North Jersey. And Mike, it's good to have you back as always. How's it going tonight?
I'm doing pretty well, Dave. Things kind of been moving pretty quickly. Actually, I'm about to sign a lease for a new apartment, so it's always fun stuff. And really coming off a very exciting PGA Championship and one that went very well, I think, for pretty much all parties involved. I mean, it was just a great showing by Justin Thomas. And, you know, I think as we discussed in the U.S. Open with Koepka, this was kind of one that we could all see coming. And just a terrific job by Quail Hollow. And really, I got to give props to the PGA of America for a good course setup because, you know, it wasn't too easy. It wasn't too difficult. I thought they kind of hit the sweet spot here with this. So good event. And I'm sure we'll talk about this more later, but only a couple more of these coming up in August because of that big news that the PGA will be moving to May. So be looking forward to talking with John and yourself about that a little bit later.
Yeah, big announcement. That happened just that announcement was just a few days ago. The PGA Championship will no longer be a part of August, and we'll get into more details on that after we finish our coverage of this year's tournament. So let's also introduce John in Connecticut to the program. John, how's it going tonight?
Doing well, Dave. Thanks for having me on again. Looking forward to discussing the event. It was an exciting PGA Championship, and you know, kind of sad it's our last golf major of the year, but. You know, the season's got to come to an end at some point. So, looking forward to discussing it. And as Mike said, certainly the ramifications of the move to May as well. I have some thoughts on that too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think It's going to bring an end to this season, but it may also eventually bring an end to covering this late into the year. So obviously our schedule will be different too. We'll be doing the PGA recap once that occurs, but more on that as we go along. Let's go into the present first. And Justin Thomas, wow. I mean, you had a lot of leaderboard changes throughout the entire tournament, and it was very exciting golf. I mean, I saw some great shots throughout all the rounds, and I don't think Sunday was an exception. So, John, your initial thoughts on this tournament and Justin Thomas's big win?
Oh, man. I mean, there's so many ways that you could go with this. I mean, obviously, you know, we can talk about the winner, Justin Thomas. You know, it's kind of funny how, I guess, you know, he's Jordan Spieth's, like, longtime best friend, and he's been just kind of, I guess, in the shadow of Spieth for a long time, or at least since they've been out on tour, and he's really kind of come into his own this year. He pulled a Jimmy Walker, I'll call it, and he won three events. You know, by the time he won his third event, I think the Texans were still in the playoffs at that point. It was like he won one tournament in the fall, and then he won two early January. So he was kind of up there at the FedEx Cup standings all year, and then really hadn't done much over the spring and summer, and then just has a great final round. And we've said it many times here on the show, you know, you not only you need to be skilled to win these events, I mean, you need to have a little luck, and he certainly had that with, you know, he hold a nice chip shot, that one putt on the 10th hole that just kind of hung over the edge and then finally dropped. He got away with some pretty errant tee shots. I think one ball hit off a tree and bounced into the fairway. So, you know, I'm certainly not taking away, you know, his abilities and his skills for winning the event. But, you know, he did get some nice breaks. He played the last three holes better than anyone of the final groups. And that's what really won in the tournament. That 7-iron he hit on 17 was just phenomenal. And then to make that putt, that was really the clinching shot. Those last three holes, I mean, that was just, you know, we might get into the course afterwards, but that was just unbelievable, those final three holes. I mean, you had guys come to the 16th tee, you know, one or two shots behind, and then they just completely threw away their tournament. Ricky Fowler on Saturday, Jason Day on Saturday. I'm sure there's others that we could dig deeper into, but those guys particularly, I mean, we could get into it more. But that was just a really a great finishing stretch for the tour, just to kind of see, you know, who would hold up against the pressure and who, you know, who would fold. And Thomas certainly did not do that. He's obviously a very talented player. I think he's, like I said, same age as Spieth, only 24 years old. I can't say that, you know, I'm really surprised that he had this kind of performance in him. Like I said, he's won three times earlier this year. But at the same time, if you followed golf, he's kind of one of those players where if anything goes a little wrong, he can kind of get hot under the collar. You saw that this summer at the U.S. Open, where he had that great 63, and then the next or 64, I'm sorry, and then the next round, he just, you know, he didn't have it on Sunday. So he's kind of a streaky player like that, but definitely, like I said, very talented. And, you know, we'll see where this goes for him. You know, he could, I guess, harness this kind of like Spieth did after he won his first major and turned into one of the world's best players. But honestly, I'm going to say I don't foresee that coming unless he can kind of stay on a more even keel. And he was able to do that this week, which shows great for his, you know, possibly for the future. But I think in general, I'm going to say he needs to kind of lighten up a little bit with I guess his attitude. He's kind of he kind of reminds me a little bit of John Rahm, another guy who just can't seem to get over the hump where if he has a bad shot, it just gets to him. And Thomas was like that before this week. So I'll give him a ton of credit for hanging in there and getting through those last three holes, especially on Sunday. So good job by him. But like I said, I don't see many majors in his future unless he can, I guess, kind of tone that down a little bit.
Interesting observations, John. Let's go over to Mike and let's get your thoughts on Justin Thomas's big win. You had some initial thoughts early, but what impressed you most about the way that he had won and the people he was up against?
What impressed me most? I really didn't think about that very much, but I guess just a quick general thing. You know, he started off in round one, and he didn't do that well. He shot 73, and we're kind of thinking, eh. But really, the last three rounds, I mean, just terrific. The 66 in round two, and at round three, the third round was just like train wreck scenarios left and right for so many players, and we'll get into that more later. But it holds it together with the 69, and then, of course, the great 68 on Sunday, you know, and that's with a bogey on 18 when the tournament was already won. So, you know, who really cares about that? But, you know, this is a guy who basically was neck and neck with Spieth. In fact, Spieth wound up winning like the, what do I call it, the World Juniors or the Junior Amateur for under 18. But Spieth wound up knocking off Thomas in that. But basically, up until that, Justin Thomas, if you look at him through every level, had beaten Jordan Spieth, you know, growing up together. Now, when Thomas, he said this, I think, last year, that he always thought that he was better than Jordan Spieth, and then Jordan Spieth went and won those two majors, and it kind of gave him a little bit of a kick in the ass to, you know, oh, he's like, oh my God, this is how good these guys really are. I need to get going. But I would agree with John a little bit. I would say where I differ with him is that if Justin Thomas does mature a little bit with age and isn't so hot under the collar, which I think will happen. I mean, he's only 24 years old. And when I was 24, you know, my patience wasn't the best either. But like, if that happens with him, he's going to be a really good player because this guy hits the ball a long frickin' way, hits it really high. He's got almost every shot in the book. Now, what I would be a little bit concerned about with Justin Thomas is that his misses, when he has like hits a bad shot, he can hit some really bad shots. And I think a good example of that would be on the 15th hole. He has an iron in his hands on his approach, and he hits the ball so fat that he lands like 40 yards short of the green. Now, for a tour pro, that is just a horrific shot. But and, you know, a lot of people were going back to what happened in Hawaii for his second win of the year. Well, it was his second win in Hawaii because he won the Tournament of Champions and he won the Sony Open. So in the Sony Open, which, you know, like traditionally is kind of your first real tournament of the year because the Tournament of Champions, only a few guys, he's basically battling with Matsuyama, and they go up to the 15th hole, which is a par 5, and Justin Thomas, like, hits a terrible shot, but then, like, is able to hold it together and make some clutch putts down the stretch. And that's kind of what he did here, because then he comes back on 16, holds that clutch putt for par. Well, that was really big. Then on 17, which no one had been near that pin all day, because it's cut over on the left. It's like a peninsula green, so you got water short and left, and, like, to take that shot on with a 7-iron, hit a draw close to that pin. That was a ballsy shot, but he pulled it off there. So good job by him. And then, you know, 18, well, whatever. You know, he had a 3-shot lead, so there wasn't much pressure. But as John also alluded to, he did get very lucky because on 10, he hits that tee shot. It bounces off the tree back into the fairway. And then he has the putt, which we initially think that he missed, but the ball winds up falling into the cup. Now, there was a little bit of controversy. You saw it around Twitter. Well, the rule is it's supposed to be 10 seconds for the putt to drop, and people were saying it took 11 and a half. But the rule actually is it's from the time that you walk up to the ball, you can wait 10 seconds. So no rules infraction there. But if this had been the U.S. Open, who knows what we would have seen, because they are just lost when it comes to rules and infractions, the USGA. So good job by the PGA of America not making that an issue. Great job by Justin Thomas here. And if he's trying to deal with those anger issues, we saw him the next day. Tiger Woods tweeted out a nice photo of the two of them together with the Wanamaker trophy. So, you know, if Justin Thomas looking to relax a little bit, it seems like Tiger Woods is a good guy to know because he can get you some substances which will help you relax, as we saw in his toxicology report.
And that's how... okay. All right, John. And any other thoughts on the what Mike just said?
I was going to say is maybe they're filling the Wanamaker with a little with some herbs in that meeting. I don't know.
Right. All right. So let's. I'm sorry. Sorry to cut
in. Can you imagine giving back the if you gave back the Wanamaker trophy and there was like resin in it, like what would their reaction be? I don't even know.
I wouldn't know either. It's kind of crazy. So now I do want to highlight some of these other players who did very, very well in this tournament. And I think Matsuyama was the most impressive on Friday, just to pose an example. But a lot of people performed pretty well. So I think we could talk about this at this point. This could be a good segue to do surprises and disappointments, which includes some of these big performances. And if you had any other comments about this final round, we can get to those too. So we'll start with John. And let's hear your surprises and disappointments. Who did you see as the big winners and the big losers on this weekend?
All right. We'll start with disappointments because there's many. I mean, Ricky Fowler, all he's got to do is play the last three holes on Saturday and even par. And I know it's a tough stretch. Even one over par, make a two pars and a bogey, and he wins the tournament. And he just can't avoid the one or two bad holes in every major that seems to just cripple his chances. And he did it on Saturday. You think, and here comes Fowler, and then he gets up to the 17th, and he puts it right in the water. He misses a putt on 18, and then all of a sudden, he's four over in his last three holes. And then he has a nice run on Sunday, but again, he's another shot or two short. So, I mean, he's definitely got – his game has really improved. I mean, he's right up there in every major, but he's just got to learn or somehow figure a way not to get these bad holes in the mix. I don't know, what he can do in terms of mental preparation or what, but he's just killing his chances every time with just one or two holes, really, or else he'll win this event. Matsuyama, you kind of thought that, okay, he's going to just cruise to this once he got up there near the lead. But, again, his putting really holds him back. He just sticks his iron shot on the first hole. And once he missed that putt, it kind of set the tone for the day. And his swing, honestly, he was kind of off with the rest of his shots the rest of the round. But, again, that putt kind of set the tone. As he can't, as we saw last week at the WGC in Akron, I mean, his ball striking is just impeccable. It's just when he makes the putts, he wins. When he doesn't, he finishes in the top five. So, one of these majors, the putts will fall and he'll win. But, that's kind of his deal. The biggest, let me see here. Actually, a big disappointment for me anyway, the two guys who very disappointed me on my FanDuel team. I have no idea what I was thinking picking Phil Mickelson. Well, actually, I do know what I was thinking. He's called this course one of his favorite on tour. He's finished second like four or five times. He literally played 30 holes before he finally made a birdie, and he finished like 10 over. Just a complete disgrace from Phil Mickelson. I think he might be just about done in terms of, trying to win major championships. If he can't do well on this course, which he loved, he's not going to do well anywhere. Also disappointed in Xander Schauffele, who we talked about. We kind of, gave him some grief after the U.S. Open, and then he had a great summer. He's very consistent every week. I take him this week for my FanDuel lineup, and then he shoots 80 in round two. So a bad job out of him, but, he's a young player. I won't hold it against him. But that was kind of disappointing after he had played well. I'm a little surprised as well about Spieth. He just didn't have it this week. I don't know what to make of the pressure. He had an interesting comment that he said the PGA would be the hardest for him to win. I don't know what to make of that, just because of the way the course is set up. I don't know. He feels like his game is best suited for the other three majors, but he's going to have to win this one at some point if he wants to complete the career Grand Slam. Not really surprised with Dustin Johnson. He kind of been just average since his quote-unquote fall at the Masters. So I think he finished, 15th or so. I mean, that's just average for him. He had a nice round on Sunday, but he was never really in contention. As for surprises, even though he kind of fell down on the leaderboard on Sunday, but Chris Stroud was a real nice surprise. Your classic journeyman tour player, just got his first win at an opposite field event, and just carried all the momentum into the PGA and was in the final group on Sunday. And he had, he had some great interviews too. He was just really positive, and, his play just couldn't hold up. towards the end, but, you know, that was a big surprise to see him right in the mix towards the end. And then one more, I guess, surprise, although I will give myself kudos for picking this guy for my FanDuel team, Jordan Smith, not Jordan Spieth, Jordan Smith out of England from the European Tour finished top 10, tied for 9th at 1-under. So he had just won an event on the European Tour, which is kind of why I just threw him in my FanDuel lineup at a cheap price, and somehow I ended up getting 3rd after Kevin Kisner double bogeyed the 18th hole. So I guess it gave Ricky Fowler more points for a top 5, so... In any event, self-promoting, we're happy about that. So I guess this is kind of my rundown of surprises and disappointments from this week's PGA Championship.
Well, that's a good rundown. Thanks for breaking it all down there, John. I am intrigued by the FanDuel, and I think that's something I'll pursue next year for sure because it sounds like a lot of fun.
I think Mike actually won again. I think he won the U.S. Open, and I think he won this one, or the British Open, and then he won this one. So he's on quite the roll with the golf duels. I was happy to sneak in 3rd for the consolation prize, so I'm pleased with that.
Mike, congratulations. You are on fire.
Yeah, I'm pulling a McIlroy in 2014 to end the season. So nice little streak by me. And I got pretty lucky there because who was it that just like me? Oh, why the hell am I not thinking of his name? The guy's he's like the second longest hitter besides Bubba Watson. He was on the Ryder Cup team last year.
J.B. Holmes,
exactly. J.B. Holmes had to scramble to make the cut. If he had missed the cut, there's no way I would have won. Because, John, if you had only had one player miss the cut, you would have won that thing. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. My debate was either Mickelson or Paul Casey for my last player. And I figured Casey's never going to win, but he's going to give you a top 20. But Mickelson has the upside if he has a great week. So I went with Mickelson, and that was just a huge mistake. So even though Casey kind of fell off, if I had him in there, I probably would have won it for sure.
Oh, without a doubt. But, yeah, a lot of that is luck, too, because, you know, I did have Justin Thomas, but you look in, he only contributes, like, less than 100 points, and my total score was, what, 460 or something like that? So it really comes down to, like, having guys just to make the cut, just get them through the cut and then have them play well on the weekend. So, you know, you can backdoor it in that, but if you backdoor it, it's as good as, in fact, it's probably better than being in the front door, because if you're coming in the front door and you fall off at the end, you drop points. So it's certainly interesting. I would say the strategies are there. Well, I don't want to give away all of my strategies on it because I'm doing pretty well. But I would say the main strategy is get guys to the weekend, and if you do that, you're in pretty good shape.
You know, FanDuel in every sport definitely has its own nuances and strategy, and I've learned a little bit of that with baseball as I'm doing that. I'm sure football has a different strategy, and basketball, and you do that, John, has a different strategy. So this is pretty cool. Like, I'm excited to see this kind of juice that can be augmented to a great tournament like this one. And sometimes FanDuel can be very useful if the tournament's a dud, and then you can still have other stuff to keep track of. So, we got to go back.
Yeah, should I do surprises and disappointments?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's time to get back to you for surprises and disappointments. So, Mike, it's all yours.
I guess we'll start with the disappointments first. Now, John did make a good point that Dustin Johnson has not been playing well, but I'll tell you, they have this course in now, granted, it's not with the changes, but I could tell you the changes are pretty simple that they made. The first hole is basically they took the first and the second hole, which was a downhill par 3, and made them into one hole. So it's pretty easy to, like, see what they did. But, like, just looking at this course, and, you know, I know it's a video game, but if you look at courses in video games, it gives you such a better idea of the elevation changes and the lines you have to take off the tee. This course was tailor-made for Dustin Johnson. I mean, absolutely, especially with this cut he hits now. And we know he can hit a draw because that used to be his go-to shot. But this course is absolutely tailor-made for Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy. But we'll get to McIlroy in a second. But Dustin, he's just had nothing going on. So, you know, we don't know what really happened there with that fall in before the Masters. But, you know, something happened there, and I don't think it was just a fall because this guy looked unbeatable. He looked like Tiger Woods
at his best. And I know, like, we always used to get on people for making that comparison, but it's true. That's what he looked like. So I don't know what happened there, but this course was absolutely tailor-made for Dustin Johnson, and he couldn't get anything done. So that was disappointing. John Rahm, now we know what the big problem is. This guy has got to get his temper under control. I mean, it is frankly out of control. I mean, did you see on the 18th hole, he actually pulled the shot off, but he hit the ball near the bank. So he just goes up with his back to the ball and, like, takes a swing at the club, like, backhanded to get the ball out. Like, take off your shoes and take a stance in the creek. What are you doing? It's like, well, I don't give a shit. And he just stands up there and hits it. So, this guy has so much talent. He really does. Now, one thing that is interesting about John Rahm is that if you look at his club head speed just purely on that, it's not all that impressive. But he has, like, however they calculate driving efficiency, which, like, takes your club head speed, your launch angle, your smash factor, and figures it out. He basically has the most efficient swing in the game because he generates the most yards with, like, the fewest miles an hour. So you just got to wonder that if he starts mishitting the ball a little bit or if his swing changes a little bit with age, which will happen naturally, if that will hold up. But we got to see. But, you know, for what we saw this guy do at Torrey Pines and the Irish Open, one, that was just tremendous how he ran away with that on a Lynx course. So you really thought, well, this guy is versatile. He's got a game for anywhere. And he didn't do anything. Now, Grant, it's his first year as a pro, so we got to lay off him a little bit. But he didn't do anything in the majors this year. I mean, tied for 58th. He's a lot better than that. So disappointing there for John Rahm. McIlroy, he can say he's injured. I don't know how much he can practice. But to me, if you team the ball up, how hurt are you? Because if you have a significant injury, you can't really play golf. I'm sorry. That's just what it comes down to. Because if your club head is 1% closed or open, that's the difference between the fairway and the woods. So I don't know how hurt he is. We'll see what he does going forward. But, you know, if I were him, I wouldn't play at all this year if you even think you're injured. But we'll see where that goes. Now, who's surprised? I guess we go to the two guys in the final. I'm sure that CBS and TNT were probably dreading a potential Chris Stroud, Kevin Kisner shootout for the PGA Championship. Now, luckily, that did not materialize. Stroud, Kevin Kisner, I know Andy made the point that he's a little bit like Davis Love, and I kind of see that, too. You know what else I see with Kevin Kisner is that he kind of has those, like, spaced-out eyes a little bit like Bubba Watson has. So it's almost like, and the thing is that, you know, Davis Love, for all the grief we give him, when Davis Love first came up, he was a very long hitter. So that's where I would say the one big difference is between him and Kisner. But for Kevin Kisner to be, you know, I was weighing taking him on my fantasy team, so I can't say I'm that shocked he did that well. He seems to be a solid player, but if we looked at the course, I think we were a little bit surprised to see him contend. Chris Stroud, yeah, he won that the Barracuda Championship, which is the alternate event to the WGC Bridgestone, to get in on the last as the last man into the PGA Championship. So a nice little story there. Seems to have a pretty interesting perspective on life, although I did think he was getting a little bit tired. Like, you're in the fourth round, you're in the final group. Yes, Chris, there is pressure on you. He's like, I'm just going to go out there and let the other guys make mistakes. No, you got to play golf too. So tone that down a little bit, but meh. Good story, though, going in on that Barracuda Championship. And I'll give that tournament a plug because I always enjoy watching that because they play it at Reno, and it's this course going through the mountains. It's a Jack Nicklaus design. I actually really like watching it, and they play that modified Stableford format where you get, like, positive points depending on birdies, eagles, or whatever. So you, like, see the winning score is, like, plus 67. You're like, well, what the hell? No, it's a different scoring system. So I got to say that was surprising to see it as a final group. Another big surprise in this one, Francesco Molinari. I'm sorry. I do not see how that guy's game translates to big events, but good job by him. And he had a couple really good rounds. I mean, if you look at his – he went 73, 64, 74-67. So two really fantastic rounds. If he had just been a little bit lower there on those on Thursday and Saturday, he would have been right in it. Of course, well, back to disappointments, but John touched on this, so I didn't really want to get into it. You know, just seeing Fowler and Day blowing up the way they did, and I guess I'll just like kind of segue a little bit into what Jason Day did on Saturday on the 18th hole has to be one of the worst decisions in golf history. Where was the shot? There was no shot there. You can't hit that. There's nowhere to go. He saw something. Yeah, he might have been seeing things because he was dehydrated and hallucinating if he saw a shot there. I mean, get freaking, what are you, chip it into the fairway and make your bogey and go home. What is he doing? So he tries to hit a snap hook, basically. And if the ball doesn't hook, it's going to hit someone in the head and kill them. So great job there. But he goes to hit a snap hook. It, like, ricochets off a branch and winds up in a bush, and he has to take an unplayable lie. I mean, you can't be that dumb. And he's got to go and look at that thing, because on the hole there, they have, like, a whole hospitality tent. And he's got to realize, well, if I don't hit it, it's going to hit off the tent, and it could go right into those bushes. But just a terrible job. And then even when he gets the drop and it gets relief from the stand, he still has to go off at, like, a certain angle because he can't hit it up over that bush. So the guy shoots a 41 on the back nine going bogey quad on his last two holes. So that's your freaking round right there. So I don't know what he was doing. It might have been the heat. But that was. But really, to be honest with you, for how bad Jason did, I mean, because they had the shot tracker up, or the track man, he was hitting snap hook after snap hook after snap hook. So I don't know if he's re-injured himself or something. Maybe that's why he tried to hit a snap hook, because he's figuring, well, it's been my shot shape of choice for today, so I'll go for that. But really, I don't know what the hell he was thinking. And John touched on Ricky Fowler. Yeah, it is a disappointment, but we mentioned this earlier. Is it really surprising anymore with Ricky Fowler at this point? It's not for me.
Yeah, it's really too bad. I mean, I know we've had a long history of getting on Ricky Fowler for just not having a big performance in these big events. And I mean, yeah, he did finish near the top of the leaderboard, but he had his chances. You mentioned Day had his chances, and others have as well. So, well, that puts it in the books for the most part. We're still not done. We have some other aspects to cover. I know that, Mike, you were talking about how nice the course was. So let's go to John and get some expanded thoughts on Quail Hollow. John, what did you make of the course play during the course, no pun intended, of this tournament?
I thought it was great. I mean, this was always, even when it was a regular tour event, this was always one of the courses that I enjoyed watching, mostly because it, even when they played it as a regular event, it wasn't like a birdie fest. I know McIlroy had some unbelievable rounds, but for the most part, your winner was like 12 or 13 under. You know, you had, you know, there were birdies available. You had to hit good shots to win at this course. And like I mentioned, those last three holes were just absolutely brutal. And you know what? I kind of like that for a major championship. Either that or a par five to end. So there's a lot of different possibilities. But I mean, you really needed to bring your game and face the pressure on those last three holes, or else you were just it was just going to eat you alive. And as Mike described with Jason Day, he's absolutely right. I have no idea what he was doing. I mean, he was aiming way right into the bushes, that there's a tree like 10 feet in front of him. There was no way he could hook that ball. That was just bad from the start, but regardless, he covered that well. I thought this course was great. I thought it played there was opportunities available on certain holes that you could take advantage of. You had the three par fives, you had a short par four, a couple other holes that you could birdie, and then you had your holes like I said, 16, 17, 18, where you just kind of had to play solid golf and hold on. So I thought the course was great. It's always a little dicey when you're in the south with the weather, but there's only that one day with the delay, so. All in all, I think it was great, and I definitely think I think the USGA was watching that and said, man, let's bring the U.S. Open to this course because they could make it really tough. So we'll see if they dive into that. But I thought it was great, and you know, hopefully we'll see some more championship-level events at Quail Hollow in the future.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So let's go to Mike for his thoughts, additional thoughts on Quail Hollow.
Well, the one thing that we didn't get into about the about the changes was that they changed the grass from I believe it was bent grass. It might have been bent with something else in just to make it survive the summer better, but it was changed into this new grass called Tif Bermuda. Now, I don't want to turn this into the agronomy hour, but if you know anything about grasses or course design, Bermuda was traditionally used in like the South and stuff because with the tremendous heat, it's hard to keep grasses there and cut them short enough to lift. But always the problem with Bermuda was it's very grainy, not really good to putt on. But with this, the technology they have these days, they've developed this stuff called Tif Bermuda, which is supposed to be like bent grass on the greens. Because, you know, a big reason that Augusta National uses bent grass is to have those picture-perfect greens, but as a result, and have them play perfectly, too, I should say. But as a result from using that, they have to shut the course down basically the entire summer, because if you kept it open, the grass would die. But this stuff called Tif Bermuda, they redid the course with that, and it makes such a difference, really. It's not on the greens, because they kept the greens smooth, you know, it rolled true. But the rough's not even that long, really. In some places it is, but it's not, like, outrageous. But Bermuda rough, it can be so dicey to play out of that it really did change the character of the course a little bit. It got to the point where, well, if you hit the rough here, yeah, you might catch a good lie. But a lot of times you're screwed. And we saw that with Jason Day on 18, where he couldn't advance a ball. Like 100 yards, basically. And McIlroy alluded to that, how much it changed the course. So, and you could tell right away going on, the thing that stood out to me about how much different it looked, aside from the new holes, obviously, was that you looked into the rough and you just saw how much different it looked. It had that, like, patchy kind of look, and that's just the Bermuda. So, Tif Bermuda, it's becoming really popular in the South. I know when I was in Hilton Head and played a course, they just redid, like, all the courses in the resort there. So Harbor Town and the two courses I was on are both, they both all use Tif Bermuda. It's just, it's absolutely immaculate to play on. So I'll give that grass type a little plug there. So that was really the big change for me, was the changing it from the bent to the Bermuda did bring, like, I think a few more players into this, because for how good Quail Hollow is, it was a bit biased towards the Bombers. Now, granted, we did have a couple Bombers win, but we saw players really of all different types contend here. So it's really turned this course into something a little bit different. Now, maybe if there's one criticism of it, that new fourth hole that they built was panned by the players. I thought it just looked terrible. It just seemed really gimmicky. And now, granted, when you build courses, sometimes you need to put in a hole just to get from one section to the other. That's basically what it is. But that's already going to, I've heard already, it's going to be ripped up and redone. So with the exception of the fourth hole, it's, you know, it really was a magnificent course, and that, you know, that Bermuda rough really changed the character a little bit. It became more about hitting fairways, I think, really, than, you know, just bombing it down, and if you miss the fairway, so what? So a little bit more strategy involved, so good job. And, yeah, we'll see what the future holds for Quail Hollow. I believe they are having a Ryder Cup there. I forget the exact year, but I'm not sure as for future major championships, but you got to believe there's going to be another one there after, you know, how successful this week was.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely a rousing success. I mean, you couple the, as you mentioned, you couple the excitement of the tournament itself. It certainly contributes to a very positive a positive review of the course. It definitely looked like a lot of fun to watch, give or take the gimmicky courses. So, well, once again, it's time to reevaluate the broadcast. And honestly, I don't really have much to say about it, so I just give it to you briefly. If you have anything to say, that's fine. But we could always move on to the golf news, because I feel like that's a bigger topic. So, John, anything with respect to the TNT CBS coverage of the PGA Championship?
Oh man, TNT every year. I mean, they get fixated on like the group of the old major champions who can't play, and this year it was Rich Beam and John Daly and some other guy, and it's like, who cares? We don't want to see these people play. Like, I don't understand. And it's literally, Mike can attest to it. It's every single year they feature this group of old champions that can't play, and I don't understand. Like, they think people want to see those guys, and it's like kind of a gimmick or a joke to see Rich Beam hit one shot. I don't know. I don't get it. Regardless, besides that, I mean, it is what it is. I thought, interestingly enough, I thought Trevor Immelman was a nice addition to the booth with Ian Baker Finch and Ernie Johnson for the early coverage on Saturday and Sunday. I thought he was, you know, he brought some humor. I thought he did a nice job. I'll give him some kudos for that. CBS, they, you know, they do a good job. We know what they're all about. Well, I will say, the girl that they have doing the interviews now, Amanda Baliones, I believe is her name. She does just an excellent job with the questions that she asks. Nothing compared to that girl on Holly Saunders, I think,
yeah,
her name on Fox. Yeah, she was atrocious. Now, this girl on CBS, she does an excellent job. I think they made a great hire bringing her in. I want to say she was on Golf Channel before. I can't say that with 100% certainty, but she does a really good job, and they bring her out there with the big board with the technology, and they do all sorts of stuff with the scorecard and stats and all that, those kind of things. But she asked some really good questions, so I just wanted to point that out. And then other than that, I mean, the broadcast, CBS is probably the best, broadcast for golf. Although I think Vern Lundquist is kind of getting towards the end there. I don't think he really said too much when they went to him on some of those holes, but I guess he's kind of grandfathered in. As long as he wants to do it, they'll just kind of trot him out there on a hole. But I think his best days are definitely behind him.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, from a few months ago, I thought he had retired altogether, but then we mentioned I found out, you guys knew it already, but that he was still doing golf. And I guess this is that moment where you start to wonder, you know, how much more will we see of him or hear of him on these golf events. So an interesting observation, John. Let's go to Mike. Let's get your thoughts on the broadcast.
Yeah, well, back to TNT, and John was right, and we were tweeting about this a little bit during the tournament. The Rich Beam, John Daly, Vijay Singh pairing. Now, I saw this pairing on Tuesday, and I just go, I'm like, you know what? I guarantee that within the first half an hour of the broadcast, TNT will show this group. Sure enough, 15 minutes in on Thursday, we got John Daly sinking a putt for birdie on the 15th hole or something. And then he's like 7 over par. I'm like, well, here we go. We really needed to see that. It's like, okay, let's get off of McIlroy and go over to 15 and John Daly. It's like, why? Why? Like, who is producing this that goes through and says, you know what, this is a good idea. Let's get off of this group of good players and get into John Daly, because that's what the people want to see. I mean, you know, I guess if I had to try to justify it, it would be like, well, we're trying to appeal to our non-traditional golf audience. But, you know, are you really getting that big of one at 1 o'clock on TNT? I mean, let's be honest. And another thing, this 1 o'clock crap needs to stop. I mean, it doesn't look good when the week before you're starting at 1 o'clock on the Golf Channel for a non-major tournament, and then you go in for a major and you're starting at 1. Now, it would be okay if their online stuff was a little bit better, but frankly, it's not. They don't have enough stuff. They don't have, like at least with the Masters, you get a few different holes to go through. With this, I just give you a couple of different featured groups, and that's it. So it's not enough. So I don't know. I know the deal's up in a couple of years, but seeing with what's happened with the golf deals, with the exception of the British Open, because, you know, they do a good job there with that Golf Channel NBC pairing there, covering that, it's almost like they've gotten worse. I mean, we complained about Berman for all those years, and then they gave us Joe Buck and Greg Norman, and then camera views it where you couldn't even see where the ball was landing the first year after the U.S. Open. So that might have been the ultimate lesson to us to, you know, be careful what you wish for. But TNT has to, they have to get this on a little bit earlier. I mean, you got one day where they set up the Spieth grouping to go and everyone will watch that, and one day for the McIlroy group. No, what you should do at least is have it so that we can see 9 holes of one and 18 of the other. And if you do that, it's fine. So start it at 11 even. You don't even need to start at 10. Start at 11. And that would be so much better. Now, we touched on this last year, too. I don't know what TNT is doing with their personnel. John brought it up. I was also going to bring it up. Trevor Immelman really did a good job. You know, he brings in some humor, some good observations. And, you know, he's not that disconnected from playing competitively himself with a lot of these guys that, you know, he still has a connection a little bit there. So it's not like he's completely out the pasture when he's trying to make comments and stuff. So that was a good job by them. But I don't really know what they're doing. It just seems so... It's just a very confused broadcast about what they're trying to do. They bring in Ernie Johnson, which, okay, I get. But why are you taking, like, everyone from their normal role at CBS and putting them into a different role? They take Ian Baker Finch and basically make him the lead analyst. And then they switch over, and they've got, like, Vern Lundquist, Dottie Pepper, and Gary McCord all shoved into the same tower, and they barely have room to, like, breathe, let alone fit in. They show the shot of them. They're, like, crushed together. It's like, why don't you have them in separate towers or have Dottie Pepper on the course following people? And then at 5 o'clock, they have, like, Nance roll in with, hello, friends, with him and Costas just to come in at 5 o'clock. And at one point during the broadcast, they went from Ernie Johnson, it was on the 16th hole. I heard 3 voices within 2 seconds, like, just to show you what they're doing. They go, okay, let's go to 17. And then I forget who was hitting the shot. But then Nance says the name of the guy hitting the shot, and then Immelman immediately goes to what's going on with the shot. So I'm like, why have I just heard 3 voices in 2 seconds? Like, what are they doing? So it's like, once you bring in Nance, why doesn't Ernie Johnson sign off or something? But they keep him on, and then they, like, have him and Ian Baker Finch do one grouping, and then they have Nance and Costas do another grouping. It doesn't make sense to me. Why would you pay basically 2 guys to do play-by-play instead of just having one do it and then pay for, like, another analyst? It doesn't really make sense to me. So I don't know what they're doing. We'll see where they go with it. I mean, I said this last year. If you're going to copy CBS, just copy CBS. You don't need to mix all the guys around. But... I'd agree with John. Amanda Balionis does ask good questions. She seems to have a good rapport with the players there. So I don't think she was on Golf Channel. At least I don't recognize her, or I don't recognize the name either. So I'm not sure where she came from. So maybe I can Google that, because my computer just crashed. So I'm a little bit distracted right here. Lovely. But the one thing I would say about CBS is that they were a little heavy on the commercials going in. So maybe they can try to address that a little bit. That would be better. But it's a decent broadcast, the whole thing. I mean, CBS, once we get to the weekend, it's like a regular tour event, basically. So not much on that other than try to cut out a few commercials. But, you know, TNT, it's like, figure out what you want to do and do it. Enough with this mishmash of guys all over the place and shoving 3 people into the same tower on 18. It's like, I don't get what they're doing. I don't know, but I'm not making the decision. So that's that.
Yeah, you did mention that last year. I seem to remember that, like how they're just putting one guy with a different guy from the other network and so on. So it's a little weird. No doubt about it. I was reminded of that a bit when I was watching the early 2 rounds, and I was like, wait, Nance is doing a hole, and then you have Ernie Johnson doing a hole at the same time, and it did get a little confusing, so I'll admit to that as well. So that should, I think, wrap it up for the PGA Championship. Again, let's take a moment to address any other issues that you were looking at, or any other moments that you're watching from the tournament. Anything else that you wanted to bring up from this year's event, John?
No, I think we covered everything pretty good. I think we'll talk next about the big news about it moving to May, right?
Yep, absolutely. Mike, anything further about this year's event?
I guess just quickly on Jordan Spieth. Yeah, a little bit of a disappointment, but you know, this is not a Jordan Spieth golf course per se, so I can't say I'm really shocked. And but he'll have play. I know you said the thing about the PGA. That was a little bit odd to me because the PGA setup really, I don't think, is very consistent year to year. And I know nothing about the course it's on next year, Bellerive, I believe it's called. So we'll see what that place holds. But in a bit of an odd comment for him because you don't see him give that much. But this wasn't really a course set up for him. So I'm not really surprised that he didn't do all that well.
Yeah, I mean, when he's not on, what ends up happening is he ends up hitting the ball wide all the time. I mean, we even saw it in the in the previous major we were talking about over in the Open. But man, he just even this weekend, he was just, the ball was going all over the place. He had to clear a bunch of guys out, and he was like, "Guys, you got to step back." Yada yada yada. So he'll probably rebound from this at some point next year. That's the thing, guys. Maybe let me follow up with this. You know, you guys were talking about Dustin Johnson. He hasn't been anywhere close to being this good, to being as good as he was to start the year. I mean, if we were even to speculate what could be happening with him, what is going on? Because, like, for him to go from that bad to, I mean, from that good to this bad, I mean, he's not even competitive by the final round of every one of these majors since the Masters. So it's definitely surprising because we know that he's got great ball-striking ability. And it was definitely surprising not to see him in the mix these last few weeks. So I'll start with you, Mike. I mean, anything as far as what could be happening with Justin Johnson?
I mean, do we really want to speculate on this? I don't know, really. It could be something with drugs. We don't know. That's the thing. I really don't know. Is his head in the clouds? Who knows? Because we don't know what really happened to him. We don't know if he actually was suspended because suspensions are still private. And if they suspended him from the Masters, they wouldn't announce it from the Masters anyway. I mean, the Masters committee, they wouldn't announce something like that. So that's the thing. We don't know really what's going on. It could be a simple thing that, you know, his game just isn't there anymore, but I don't know. It's a little bit unfair to speculate. So,
okay.
I don't know. I know that he did have a problem with cocaine at one point. I don't know if he still does. So
okay. I think we can leave it at that in that case. And let's get to the big news. We have the PGA announcing that the PGA of America will move its major championship to May from August for the first time in 70 years. And I think it said here that they've been doing the PGA championship since August for about almost 50 years. It started in 1969, and there are two exceptions to that. I mean, Nicklaus won in February 1971. I don't know why it was done in February that year, but last year
it was in Florida.
Oh, because Florida would have been too hot. Yeah, that's a decent. I guess that's probably right. And then the other one was last year because of the Olympics, and actually, just as you pointed out, Mike. I mean, part of the move is a benefit to Florida and Oklahoma and Texas and places like that. That would be like 130 degrees right now. They can start hosting things again. But the speculation or the rumblings in the article I was reading from ESPN was that some other areas get hosed. Like there are some places that are going to be too cold to do a PGA championship in May. So we can get into that in more detail now. The other part of this move is that the Players Championship will go move from May into March, so that is now the first big event we see before the Masters. And the Players used to be in March, but they moved it to May, I think, just to help build up drama. I think we may have even covered that on the podcast, right, guys? Like, we talked about how they moved it to May, so that we can build up, like, a little bit of juice between the Masters and the U.S. Open. So a lot of changes for sure. Let's go to John first to get his thought on them. Do you like the changes, John? Do you feel like this would be a benefit to the PGA? And what other nuances can you comment on regarding these moves?
I like it. I'll say personally it's bittersweet for reasons I'll explain in a minute, but I think for the game of golf and I think for the PGA Tour schedule, I think it works out great. The Players back to March, you're set up now with 6 months of defined big events in golf. You're going to have March, the Players, Masters in April, the PGA in May, U.S. Open June, the Open in July, and then you're going to have your FedEx Cup and your Olympics and the years that the Olympics is playing, your FedEx Cup Olympics, all that stuff in August. And then I've said it for years, ever since the PGA started the FedEx Cup, I've said it every single year. They need to end the FedEx Cup on Labor Day because, you know, we're probably two of the biggest golf fans there are, Dave, but I am not watching the Tour Championship on the NFL Sunday. It's just not happening. I mean, last year was such an exciting final round, and I barely watched any of it because I was probably watching the Packers and other games that were going on. So for me personally, I think there's probably other people like me. They're just, if you end it on that Labor Day, it just, you know, you're going to have a captive audience, basically. I mean, you're going to have to compete one day with college football, but honestly, it would be the second round if they're keeping it on the Friday through Monday schedule. So I think it's great for the tour. I think it builds up all year, and then you're going to be able to play with the schedule in August on the years where the Olympics come into play, and then the schedule won't be so jammed like it was last year. And even this year, I mean, you had guys playing 6 or 7 weeks in a row towards the end here. So I think it's great for the PGA in general. It's kind of, like I said, it's kind of bittersweet just because, you know, things in life, you just kind of associate with certain events and dates. And it's just, for me, just growing up, you know, I'd be at the beach with my family on vacation and we'd be watching the PGA in August, and it would just kind of be around that time. So it's just kind of a bittersweet thing in that regard. But because when you look back on memories and you think, oh yeah, the PGA's, and now when the PGA is in May, you're kind of not going to have those, I guess, those memories when it comes around in that certain time. But in terms of overall for the game of golf, I think this was a great move, and I think it'll work out well. And I think the players seem to be on board with it. In terms of the courses not being able to host, I mean, they had the PGA Championship in Oklahoma one year. I know you mentioned Oklahoma. Tiger actually won it at Southern Hills. So, you know, that, you know, they've done it before. So I guess that's even better now. We'll get those courses in the mix in May. You know, as for courses up north, like Whistling Straits, you think maybe they couldn't host it in May. They probably could if it was in late May. I mean, by Memorial Day, your grass is going to be grown in, and you're going to be able to host the event. I'm probably thinking that it's going to be a week or two before then. Even by then, that you should be able to host it. And if not, I mean, they can just get a U.S. Open. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. But I guess we'll see about that when they start to announce future sites. And just a side note, as for next year, I agree. I don't know much about that Belrive Country Club. I think they played one of the FedEx Cup events there recently, but I don't seem to recall much of it, or a World Golf Championship. So that'll be interesting for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, it's going to be an exciting next few years, I think. So let's go to Mike for his thoughts on the PGA Tour changes.
If this was just a standalone thing with no other sports to worry about, I would say it's perfect. Now, John does have a good point, and we have talked about this on this show numerous times, that the FedEx Cup ends 2 weeks too late. And even last year, same thing. You know, I'm watching football in those days, you know, because once football comes back, you know, you kind of get that itch, and, you know, golf's been on for the last, 9 months. So it's just like, yeah, I can take a break from this and I want to watch football. So like even that McIlroy playoff win, like I basically tuned in right at the end when I found out it was going into a playoff just to watch it. But I wasn't watching the final round of the Tour Championship that day. I was like, screw it, I'm watching football. So yeah, it's the same thing. If none of us are watching the golf, then clearly there's a problem. Now, with the PGA, here's the one thing I would say about it. Moving to May, yes, it does make sense, but at the same time, are you hurting your brand a little bit by having to do that? Perhaps a little bit. And the one thing I don't like is, like, if the Devils get good again, which hopefully will happen sometime again in my lifetime, like, if you have the NHL playoffs and the NBA playoffs and baseball has started and all this other stuff going on, it's a bit crowded in May. It can be. You know, you got big auto racing events. You got all kinds of stuff in May. So it's a little bit busy. It would be my one thing. Now, will I still watch? Yeah, of course I'll still watch. But it does bring in the possibility of a lot of overlapping events. So we'll see what happens. We don't know what's going to happen, and we'll see exactly what date they schedule it for, because I don't think the schedule is not 100% confirmed yet. So we'll see what happens. But in terms of moving it to May, I see why they did it. To be honest, August is not the best month for weather in a lot of places, like even around here. Like it's just August, a month where you can get a lot of those pop-up thunderstorms late, and there always seems to be some sort of weather delay at the PGA Championship for something. Like we can even go back the last few years, I don't believe there was one at Whistling Straits. Perhaps I'm mistaken on that, but 14 at Valhalla. Remember, they almost didn't finish that final round because it started a little bit late because of some weather problems. And then last year at the PGA Championship, they played like the 36 holes basically on Sunday to finish. And then there was a weather delay on Thursday here. So, yeah, I see why they did it, and it brings a lot of courses into play. Now, can they host events in May all over the place? Probably. Now, we're going to get the litmus test because they have the PGA is scheduled for Oak Hill in Rochester, New York, I believe, in 2021. So we're going to see how you go from an upstate New York winter and try to get the course ready by May. So I guess that'll be the test, and we'll see how it goes through there. Now, apparently they hosted a senior PGA championship there in May, and it was fine. So we'll see. Who knows? But I understand why they did it now. So I have mixed emotions about it, I would say. On one hand, it's like, yes, we got a lot more courses in play. I thought that they might do something where – okay, they'll move it to basically, they'll have it in the spring one year and in the summer another year, depending on where the course is or stuff. If they wanted to do that, I think that would have made sense. But a permanent move, not a huge surprise because there were rumblings of it. But, it should bring some excitement in. But, that's going to be a quick 4 months there. You know, you get into the Masters, and it's just, I know it's going to feel weird that first year when we're coming off the Masters and then it's May. It's like, oh, well, now we're into the PGA Championship. You're like, what? So we'll see how it works. It just, it's breaking from something you're used to. So we'll see how this goes. And then we also have to see what event is going to be put up or what events are going to be put on the chopping block to get the PGA Tour schedule to end by Labor Day. Because apparently they do want to do that. But, they denied they're going to be cutting any events. But, do the math. You have to do it. So we'll see what comes of all this. I understand why they did it. The time slot actually does make more sense probably than August, to be realistic, but just with all those other events possibly in play, I can see how this could be a little bit messy. So, and I kind of like the August spot for where it is. I mean, we got a couple weeks till football starts. It's dog days of summer. We only have baseball on. Not that there's anything wrong with baseball, but, when it's the only sport on. But, with the golf coming to the Olympics, you could definitely see the writing on the wall. So, everything will probably be fine, and I'll probably in a few years just be here and be like, yeah, no difference. But, it's breaking with tradition a little bit, which kind of irks me, but, we have to accept it and move on.
Yeah, we do. It does, like you said, it brings about four consecutive months of majors, which is definitely an interesting groove. I wonder if that will be like, after a few years, like, I wonder if that would be kind of cool to have, like, you have, okay, this month we're going to do this one, next month we got PGA, next month we've got the next month US Open, and the next month after that will be the Open Championship, British Open. You're looking at, it's also interesting that we have the Open now as the final one, which is kind of weird, because I never thought of it as the last one, and now it's going to be the last one, so it's kind of, it is interesting. It will probably be awkward for the first couple years, no doubt. I remember when I first saw the headline, I thought that they were going to put the players, leave it where it was, and then just put the PGA first. That probably would be that much more awkward, though, because how could you have something precede the Masters, right? Wouldn't the Masters have to be the first of the majors? I mean, I can't even imagine it another way. So I think with what they had, I think they scheduled it pretty fine. So I'll leave it at that. Potpourri, let's go to John. Anything else that you had on your mind? I don't know if the Tiger Woods DUI result scenario really qualifies for this topic, but let's talk about what's going on in the world of golf. What's ahead for us here? As you mentioned, the FedEx Cup chase and all those things on the horizon. John, let's give it to you now.
Yeah, well, you have one more Sheeran event this week, the Wyndham Championship in North Carolina. And it's actually kind of interesting to see because, you know, a lot of these guys are playing for their tour cards. If they don't make the top 125 in FedEx Cup points after this week, if you're not exempt, you have to go play in the web.com finals to try to regain your PGA Tour cards. So this is the last chance for a lot of these guys who have struggled all year and are trying to keep their tour cards. So that's kind of an interesting storyline to follow this week's event. You know, it's not a very good field at all. As you would expect, all the big names after playing for so many weeks, and then the FedEx Cup starting next week, there's literally no one playing. I think the highest ranked player in the world here is Henrik Stenson, and I believe he's playing just so he can have the number of events necessary to qualify for the FedEx Cup. So it's a very weak field, but it is kind of interesting, like I said, to follow the chase for these guys getting their tour cards. So definitely worth a watch on Sunday afternoon, the back nine to follow that. And then you have the four FedEx Cup events. I don't quite remember where they're playing the first one, the Northern Trust now they're calling it. You know, they always have it around the New York, Long Island area. I'm not exactly sure of the course. I think it's somewhere they haven't played before. Mike can educate us on that. I know he's in the area. And then they play it at TPC Boston, like usual. And then they're back at the course in Chicago, I believe, Conway Farms for the third one. And then, of course, the Tour Championship. And I think they're taking the break after, I want to say, the second event this year. They always have a week off in there. And then they'll finish up the last two. And then the President's Cup, which is just awful this year. If you look at the international team, the U.S. is just going to wipe the floor with the international team. But, you know, NBC will promote it and, you know, might watch a little bit. But, you know, I'm pretty sure the U.S. is just going to cream them. So might be interesting for a little bit anyway. And the team golf is always a fun thing. And then the season will start again in early October, so with those fall events. So catch very little of those, obviously. But hey, if you know, if you're kind of itching for some golf and it's the middle of November, there'll be tournaments on. So that's kind of what's coming up.
Good stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. Certainly, you covered quite a bit there, John. And I guess if I was to ask right now, because I think I saw, who was it that was leading? Let's see, FedEx. Upstanding. But who do you have to win the FedEx Cup at from what you know right now? Like, who would you project as the winner?
Oh, man. Dave, it's so hard to predict because the points are, they're allocated differently from the playoff events where someone who's literally like 75th heading in could win the first event and then just kind of maintain. And then they're in the top five going into the Tour Championship. And then whoever is in the top five in the standings heading into the Tour Championship, they win the entire FedEx Cup. So it can kind of lead to some crazy results. So there's really honestly no way for me to just call out one person to say they're going to win it. But I actually throw this question to Mike as well. Who do you have as player of the year this year? If you're just going by pure wins, the player of the year is Justin Thomas because he has four wins, a major, and a World Golf Championship. But I kind of have a feeling he's not going to get it. I think they're probably going to give it to Spieth, who has three wins and a major championship. But it's an interesting debate for sure.
That is a good question. I would give it to Tom. Well, remember, though, there are multiple Player of the Year awards because they have the Golf Writers Player of the Year, and then the PGA of America does a Player of the Year. Because I remember that you always hear, oh, Tiger Woods, he won Player of the Year in 2013. No, he did from one group. He didn't from the other. I forget which group it was. But, you know, you go on and on about its 2013 season where he did not show up at all in the majors. But I'm getting off topic here. I think it has to be Justin Thomas, but I could see it going to Spieth, too. Now, of course, we still got some golf to play. Now, that could dictate it. You know, if Spieth wins one of these events and that place, the course in Atlanta, what is it, East Lake? Yes, East Lake. it is kind of set up for him, so it wouldn't surprise me if he won there again. So if he does that, wins the FedEx Cup, yeah, he'll win Player of the Year. So I would really say it's up in the air, but right now, yeah, I'd give it to Justin Thomas. Four wins, like you said, a WGC and a major. Granted, his other two, you got the Sony Open and the Tournament of Championship, and the Tournament of Champions, excuse me. So those are a little shaky, but, you know, a WGC and a major, you got to think he wins the award, at least right now.
Good points on that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yep. So that's a total of three wins, right? Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a pretty solid
four.
Year. Oh, four. Oh yeah, with the right, four. So yeah, that's a good year. You're right. Four for him, three for Spieth. But I mean, it's hard to argue with the results, though. Honestly, so good stuff. Yeah, I mean, that really is good. All right, guys. Well, let's see. Anything else you want to bring up from the world of golf, Mike? I mean, John did have that nice rundown. I'll give it to you for any additional thoughts.
Oh, yeah, well, he was asking me about the course. It's at a place called Glen Oaks Country Club. It's out on Long Island. Now, honestly, I have not heard much about this place. I saw some pictures of the course. It seems pretty nice. But for an area that has a lot of very prestigious clubs and very notable courses, it was a bit of a surprise that this place got this tournament. Now, I don't know much about the place. I'm getting emails and texts on my phone basically every day. They're trying to get me to buy tickets. I don't know. Maybe I will. But maybe I won't because, you know, the President's Cup is at Liberty National this year, and that's just about half an hour from me. So, you know, I might go for a day and just check that out. You know, like you said, I expect the Team USA to win in a romp. And also this week in the world of golf, we do have the Solheim Cup, which is the women's version of the Ryder Cup. So I wonder if there'll be another controversy like there was last time with the Suzanne Pedersen not giving the player the gimme on like a 6-inch putt. And then she picked the ball up and she's like, no, I didn't give you the putt. So you lost the hole. And there was this whole blow up. And then whoever the captain was for Team Europe tries to blame Suzanne Pedersen for them losing. It's like, she's your best player. Why are you blaming her? It's like, it was just it's such a disaster that last time. But really, for women's golf, what they have to do is they need to set something up where it's like South Korea versus the entire world. Because let's be honest, that's where the best players are in women's golf. So I would watch something like that. So yeah, you got this big event this year. Sure much will be made about Michelle Wee's hairstyle, which is basically dreadlocks dyed red, white, and blue. So an interesting look there. But you have that this week. You know it's something we've joked about it before, the Schwab Cup. I don't think I've ever watched a Schwab Cup event, so I can't give you anything on that. FedEx Cup coming up, yeah, you got Glen Oaks, as we touched about, then three locations that we're used to, TPC Boston. Which actually I'm hearing that event might be the one, they might chop it from three down to two, or from four to three. So that could be an event that goes, we'll see. And then apparently there's talk about wanting to move this final one, which has always been at Eastlake. They're saying, no, we don't want to do that anymore. They want multiple courses in the mix. So we'll see what happens. And, of course, yeah, President's Cup coming up, and then we'll take a break. You know, another event that I always seem to watch a little bit of, but only on the weekdays because, you know, once you get the weekends with football, it's like, screw it. But just the Web.com Tour Championship, because it's just it's nice to see the guys who are coming in there to get their PGA Tour cards. And you do see, especially on that Friday where you got guys battling to make the cut, and you also will see this week, too. So I would say definitely tune in. And we know it's kind of a pretty lackluster field, of course. But, you know, tune in on Friday afternoon and then Sunday afternoon. Because, you know, you will see some guys under some pressure here to try to keep their tour cards. And same thing with the Web.com Tour Championship. Definitely tune into that on Friday afternoon if you're not doing anything. Because you see these guys getting up on these last few holes where they got to make a birdie or they got to make par to keep their tour card or keep their hopes alive. And, you know, you can really see the pressure get to them. And a lot of guys, Phil Blackmore, he does a lot of commentating between, they move them to like Shurn events and a lot of web.com tour events, and he always said that, you know, it was, he won three times on the PGA Tour in his career, and he always said it was more pressure, like, trying to do that, like, trying to keep your card, than there was to actually try to win an event. So I just thought that was an interesting perspective on it. So you definitely see some pressure in these events like that, so that's like why I like to watch a web.com tour event. But so we should have some good golf coming up, but already, you know, we got this I got the Red Sox here and a pennant race and the baseball. Of course, we got football starting up. So, Vid, I'm wondering, can Notre Dame go into that USC game at 6-0? Well, they'll probably be 1-5 now that I said that. But, you know, like, how is it that, and speaking as a Notre Dame fan, how is it that every year, they're coming off a horrible season, and everything I'm reading is like, oh, Notre Dame underrated, this and that. It's like, no, Can't we just start off a year with no pressure? Give me a break, man.
I bet there's at least one Notre Dame fan in America that that is realistic about his team, because there are many that are not, so... I think I saw a tweet somewhere, Mike, that Notre Dame was considered the most overrated team in America this year, and I think that's probably what you're talking about. Like, it's all this high, I mean, people still trying to talk them up, even though, I mean, I was reading the Athlon preview for it, and I'm like, yeah, it did not look pretty. So, I don't know.
Well, I would say the one thing, Vid, is that quarterback, and I don't know if John knows anything about him, he can touch on this too. That quarterback, he's a local guy from Jersey, and this guy was a big star in high school, so I don't know what that necessarily means going, if that means jack shit in college, but this guy, Wimbush, he was a really, really, really good player in high school, so if that translates through it all, he should be solid, but I don't know anything about the team other than him, so we'll see.
Well, that's going to be something we'll talk about next week in our football preview. I mean, that's definitely a subject, because this is definitely, for me, it's the first time I can remember Notre Dame really not having any actual projected aspirations, honestly. I mean, if you're hearing otherwise, it's probably just really them wishing for it with their hearts, because, I mean, everything I was reading was saying that, yeah, I mean, maybe they'll go 6-5 if a lot of things work their way, but it's not really expected to be a big year, so it just depends. I mean, they got to replenish a lot of guys. I mean, it's really tough to say. I guess not long as we're here, we can have John's opinion for now. This will be a little teaser for next week, but where do you see Notre Dame right now, John?
Yeah, it's very excited for the college football preview next week. Yeah, I mean, Mike is right. The Wimbush, he's definitely very talented. They were just really unlucky last year in close games. They still have some pretty good players. I'm not going to say that they're going to be, you know, world beaters, national champion caliber, but I mean, their schedule is not too bad. I think they can win 8 or 9 games. I mean, I don't know where that gets them. Maybe a decent, maybe a New Year's Day bowl, but I don't think it's all doom and gloom for the Irish. They definitely need to get their defense straightened out. That was kind of their big problem last year. But Brian Kelly is definitely on the hot seat. I know that's kind of something that we're going to talk about, mm-hmm. but he's got to deliver this year, but I think that you could pencil them in for probably 8 wins. That's probably what I'd say for them right now, and you know, we'll see where that gets them.
I think it really depends on like what they do in the early part of the season, because they tend to schedule more of the easy teams in the early part of the year.
Well, I do know that. Sorry to interrupt, Dave. I know, you know, obviously they play USC and Stanford are two of the teams they play every year. I know they're playing at Georgia or hosting Georgia, one of the second or the third game of the year. So that should be pretty telling as to how they're looking this year. I know they also play Miami because they have that deal with the ACC. And I think they play Louisville too. So some tough games. But they also have their cupcakes. I mean, they're playing Temple week one. They're playing yep. Miami of Ohio. So, I mean, like I said, about 8 wins is probably the baseline for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I was thinking like 6 wins. But, you know, honestly, if they went like 7-5, I don't think that'd be really – that outlandish to think that they could do that. I mean, I think, you know, you could start off maybe 3-1 and then maybe 4-1. And you play North Carolina, USC. I'm looking at it here. Nah, Stanford at the end is going to be tough. Wow. Because I think Biebs has a big expectations for Stanford. We'll cover that too next week. And so, yeah, we'll see. We'll see, John. I mean, we'll see, Mike. I mean, it could be, obviously it depends on like how quickly, you know, he can, the quarterback can grow. But we look forward to seeing what happens. So we will see. All right, guys. Well, let's see. Did I give it to you for final thoughts, John? I guess we not. But so John, anything else you wanted to say before we left tonight?
No, I think we did a nice job of covering it all, and our golf coverage for the year comes to an end. So it was a lot of fun and interesting year in the major championships. You know, it's funny, we haven't had like that out of the blue, you know, completely surprising major winner like, you know, Sean McKeel or Ben Curtis back in the day, you know, winning the PGA and the British Open respectively. So, you know, good golfers have been winning these majors, which is good for the game. I mean, it's nice for the guy that kind of pops up and wins the major, but for the continuity of the game of golf, it just kind of shows you how much talent is out there. And I think it's been a great year for the majors and all exciting events. And, you know, we look forward to the FedEx Cup and coming back again next year to start all over again. So I appreciate having us on, Dave, and it's been a lot of fun.
It has been a lot of fun, and I want to thank you both for your time on here. Mike, you know, you do a tremendous job. John, same thing. I mean, it's been great, and we'll do it again next year. Gosh, I guess we do it April, and then May, and then June, and then July. Well, at some point, we're going to be doing it April, May, June, July. So until then, enjoy the football season, and all of us will be in touch for various scenarios. Like Mike, we were just talking about football picks this year as the Dodgers – okay, got under it. But, you know, would you be interested to partake in the football picks with us? We're going to probably do that rotating fourth panelist again like last year. So would you be in on that for 1 week or so?
Yeah, I can. I couldn't keep up the whole season with you guys. But, yeah, a week I'll parachute in and try to do my research a little bit and see if I can find some funky lines that I want to go with. I think I had a pretty good week last year doing it with you guys, yeah. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it should be fun. Okay, guy. Okay, Mike. Well, I'm looking forward to that then. That should be great. We bring back the football picks this year on the podcast. Guys, it's been a lot of fun. All the best, and may your golf game be as good. May your golf game be good as well. Take care, everybody. We'll be in touch. Take it easy, fellas.
All right.
Take care, guys.
All right, that's our program tonight. And again, thanks to John, thanks to Mike, thanks to all of you guys listening. Like Joe Benigno says about the calls, we could not do it without you, because otherwise who would we broadcast this thing to? Anyway, that's our program. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll be back with our college football preview. Glad that you're still tuning in after all this time. We'll have more for you as we go along. So until then, take it easy. We'll see you next time.